spookily suitable for the Midrick Drive. Keep on trucking. Eddie Kendricks. And although we've said farewell and au revoir so long, auf Wiedersehen, good night to Sam Biggs, the great news is that Fiona Williams and Holly McGrattan are still with us. Yay! Laura Nero, we spoke about her a wee while back, one of the top favourites of our next guest, Paul Zollo, who was Opus Singers on Songwriting, or indeed Songwriters on Songwriting, is something we're going to be talking about in a matter of moments. Are you ready for this, Holly McGrattan?
I am ready.
Marvellous. As I say, Zollo's Song Talk provides a feast, according to Mojo magazine, as indeed does Laura Nero, who actually adds a whole new concept to the concept of construction work.
When this old world starts getting me down, and people are much too much for me to take, I climb right up to the top of the stairs.
Would have been a crime to actually talked over the last sequence of Laura Nero's Up on the Roof, wouldn't it, Paul Zollo, songwriter and indeed author extraordinaire?
Hello, Alex. Yeah, in fact, it would be a great delight anytime you get to talk to Laura Nero.
Well, as I say, we'd have to go beyond the dimensional world of the whole thing. Just listen to her songs, listen to the music, it will continue ever onwards. Indeed, as she said, for her, songwriting was a serious playground. When writing songs, she said she felt that you really are with your essence. There can be delight there, there can be self-discovery, you can dance there. And so it goes. Text taken, of course, from Songwriters on Songwriting. And it's always a pleasure to actually focus on. I mean, I've just been wading my way through this book. And we kind of reached Lieber and Stoller today with a few other sort of aspects coming into that basis. Now, let's test the Midrick Drivettes on this particular one. Fiona Williams, Lieber and Stoller?
Not knowledgeable about it.
No. Hound Dog? You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog.
Yes.
All the Way. Yeah, they wrote that.
Oh, okay.
Is That All There Is? We'll listen to that in a few moments. Holly, Lieber and Stoller.
I feel like I know the name, but I can't tell you anything.
They know the name, but it's the melody lingers on. That's the critical routine. Paul, over to yourself, because Lieber and Stoller to Jerry Lieber. Is it Jerry Lieber? Joe Stoller, two fine folk who you actually give the first range of interviews to. Actually, no, second, I think, in terms of the singers on songwriting scenario. How did you get in contact with them yourself?
Well, I was doing interviews for songwriting magazines. Almost all the interviews in my books were done for different magazines originally. But Lieber and Stoller were the architects of rock and roll, two Jewish boys from Los Angeles who fell in love with blues, and they wrote a blues that just happened to have been recorded by Elvis Presley called Hound Dog. Wasn't intended to be rock and roll. And they kind of created rock and roll and were the first producers, really, of rock and roll without even completely understanding what they were doing. And they wrote many, many famous songs. And they're one of many songwriters in the book whose songs are much, much more famous than their names are. But when you think of a song like Stand By Me, which they wrote with Benny King, and John Lennon recorded it, Kansas City, Yakety Yak, and as you mentioned, Is That All There Is by Peggy Lee. They wrote so many timeless and great songs.
Well, let's have a little musical choice to put to you initially, Paul, because I'm going to give you a choice here. You can go for the Elvis Presley version of Hound Dog or the Big Mama Thornton version of Hound Dog. Which one are you going to go? Big Mama Thornton, Hound Dog, or Elvis Presley and Hound Dog?
Well, with great love for Elvis, always, I will choose Big Mama just because it gives more insight into the history of this song. Mm. That it wasn't written for a man. It was written for her, a woman, to scream at a man, which is basically, you're a bad person, you're a dog.
You're a Donald Trump. Sorry, I didn't really say that.
Yes, perfect for Trump. I think the original intention and the spirit of the song comes across with most purity in Big Mama's version.
And of course, you don't have the line, you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine, you know? Because why would a bloke be out catching rabbits? It's silly, you know? Big Mama.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Elvis heard this guy named Freddie Bell sing it in Vegas, and Freddie had changed the lyrics. But as Lieber, who wrote the words, said, it's a song from a woman to a man who's really not a good man. And yet, Elvis was singing to a dog. It wasn't a song about a dog. It was a song about a man acting like a dog.
Fiona, are you ready for Big Mama Thornton's original incarnation of Hound Dog?
Of course.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You made me weep and moan. You made
We knew if one can know, it was a smash. In the Blues Field, Lieber and Stoller and Hound Dog. What did you make of that one, Holly?
That was the first time I've heard Big Mama Thornton sing her version of it. I really, really like that.
You see, that, with the magic of Paul Zollo, is what the Midweek Drive can actually bring to you. Some of those authentic touches. Fiona?
Very relatable. I've met a few hound dogs in my university days.
Even in the 21st century, that's arranging for. And when you were speaking to Lieber and so on, I mean, clearly what comes across with the interview, and because you've pretty much done it as a full transcript, is you get a sense of the kind of friendly rivalry, the banter between both the songwriters, and kind of how they viewed their own craft of songwriting. I mean, did you get that sense deliberately when you were kind of composing the actual piece, Paul?
Absolutely, and I've interviewed other songwriting partners who have been together for decades, like Livingston and Evans, who wrote Silver Bells, or Bacharach and David, and they often are like married couples, because they've been working together often much longer than their own marriages, and very intimately, and almost like siblings, so they do tend to bicker, and Lieber and Stoller famously remembered their history in slightly different ways, and would argue about it, and their history as written prior to my book was completely distorted. So much about what they said was simply incorrect. But one of the funniest stories about Hound Dog that they both confirmed was, I asked if they wrote it on a piano. They said, no, we wrote it on the car. He was banging on his green car and just singing it. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. The car was the only rhythm instrument. And they brought it to Big Mama, and they had written out the music, and she looked at it, and they realized she was holding it upside down because she was illiterate. She couldn't read. But they didn't want to embarrass her, so they said, well, maybe you want to hear it. And they played it for her, and that's how she chose to do it.
She was singing to a man, he was singing to a dog, she was singing to a gigolo, to be very precise, somebody that was sponging off of her. That's what it was all about.
Now, Lieber said he wanted even a stronger word than hound dog. He didn't think it was strong enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got to still actually be aware of radio restrictions and so on. I think Hound Dog serves it okay from this perspective. Let's move on, given that Fiona, as we said in the first part of the programme, was having an existential crisis, to something which probably echoes that whole system. And Lieber and Stoller maintained, I thought it was quite interesting, because I got a sense that they really viewed the craft of the songwriter as being manifest in what we're about to hear from Peggy Lee, Is That All There Is? Any particular introductory lines you'd like to give to both? Because I suspect Holly and Fiona, you haven't come across Is That All There Is?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you're playing this, because Lieber and Stoller are most famous for Hound Dog and Jailhouse Rock and Kansas City and the famous rock songs they wrote. And they wrote those almost effortlessly. But to them, real songwriting was about Peggy Lee and Is That All There Is? They always felt rock and roll was a trend that, like Elvis and his people, they didn't think rock and roll would last. They thought it was a trend. But they always considered Is That All There Is a great song in the tradition of the Great American Songbook. So they were much more proud of that, even though Hound Dog, of course, is much more famous. For them, this is real adult, serious, sophisticated songwriting. And it's really a song about what is life all about? What's the meaning of life? What's the true impact? One of those questions it's hard to put in life, but you could put it in a song in a way that it resonates.
Lieber being influenced by a long, short story. Bit of a contradiction in terms there. Thomas Mann wrote it. It was called Disillusionment. It has been likened to Brecht and Weil. Peggy Lee actually said it was almost her life story. Are we ready for 4 minutes 17 seconds of Peggy Lee singing Is That All There Is?
Yep.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I'll never forget the look on my father's face as he gathered me up in his arms and raced to the burning building out on the pavement. And I stood there, shivering in my pajamas, and watched the whole world go up in flames. And when it was all over, I said to myself, Is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze. to the circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears, and a beautiful lady in pink tights flew high above our heads. And as I sat there watching, I had the feeling that something was missing. I don't know what, but when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to the circus? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. That's all there is. And then I fell in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We'd take long walks down by the river, or just sit for hours gazing into each other's eyes. We were so very much in love. And then one day he went away, and I thought I'd die, but I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep... I know what you must be saying to yourself. If that's the way she feels about it, why doesn't she just end it all? Oh no, not me. I'm not ready for that final disappointment. 'Cause I know, just as well as I'm standing here talking to you, that when that final moment comes and I'm breathing my last breath, I'll be saying to myself, is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is.
That's all there is. It's important to be positive, as we like to say. What did we make of that one, please, Holly?
Oh, I liked that. That was very good.
Oh, and Fiona?
I definitely like that one as well.
Did it help you kind of cope with life and all the rest of the bits and pieces? Don't give up, but that might be all there is. Paul, I'd often say that's a bit of an acquired taste, but certainly it does touch on the human condition so sharply and so piercingly. I mean, I can understand anybody who actually listens to that would think, yeah, Lieber and Stoller, the range of material they got together, and undoubtedly they were very proud of that one.
They were. I think they were more proud of that song and the whole album that it came from. It was a whole album of songs they wrote for Peggy Lee. And they really did consider rock and roll to be kid stuff, and this was more adult. Mm. But let's face it, the rock and roll is loved almost by everyone. It is truly universally loved in a way this isn't. This isn't acquired taste. It's more sophisticated. It's theatrical. It has nothing to do with rock and roll. So to me, it's ironic that it came out of these guys who really launched the whole world of rock and roll in such a powerful way, yet they themselves didn't embrace it.
I may be conflating stories here, but isn't there a piece that you actually do in which Lieber and Stoller are actually locked in a hotel room until they actually write songs? And they have to write four songs, or have I sort of confused that with another artist or writer?
Right, no, that is them. Yeah. And in fact, though I did say they didn't love Elvis Presley's version of Hound Dog, which is true because he got the lyrics wrong, and as I said, it was written for Big Mama. They did love his singing, and he recorded many of their songs, and so he was doing many movies, and they were hired to write a whole song cycle for a movie, and they went to New York to write it. They were L.A. boys, and much more than rock, they were in love with jazz, and they were in New York City, so they wanted to go out and see all the great jazz legends who were there at that time. And they weren't writing songs, so the producer of the movie said, you got to stay in your hotel room. I'm going to put a guard outside you until you write four songs. And they did. They wrote four songs, including the song Jailhouse Rock. And the title for the movie hadn't been determined. The title came from the song, which and Jerry Lieber's idea for a title, Jailhouse Rock. So they did come up with four great songs under pressure like that, which is interesting and not unusual in great songwriting. And in so many instances in the Brill Building or Motown, really great, amazing songs were written under great pressure and often very quickly. It's an interesting thing about songwriting itself.
So you see, Holly, that's clearly the sort of pressure that you should be thriving under. You did the 48-hour film challenge earlier this year.
Just do it. Just
exactly.
Do it.
Get your team, just draw the sofa in front of the hotel room door. Just do not let them pass until music has been personified. It's only 2:23. Paul, if you stay with us, I think it's time for you to introduce Elvis Presley and Jailhouse Rock. Over to you, sir.
Beautiful.
You'll be pleased to know, Paul, that two of our very own jailbirds have been released from their confinement in terms of the School of Journalism here. We have been joined by Hannah and Tessa, so hurrah for that perspective. Jailhouse Rock echoing in so many ways there. It's still toe-tappingly fun and wonderful, which is great stuff. Any questions you want to put to Paul Zollo, please. Holly, given that we've just seen that more songwriters on songwriting available in all wonderful things, typical time to read, 16 hours and 50 minutes.
Wow, yeah, we were just reading a page, actually.
Got to savour it. You know, we see this with Paul as a long-term contractual sort of connection we're building on, really, so carry on.
Is there one part of the interview or one interview that you really recommend the listeners or readers to read?
Well, in the new book, this one is the sequel, More Songwriters on Songwriting. The original was called Songwriters on Songwriting. And in the first one, I think the Bob Dylan interview is the one that has gotten most of the attention, because he never, ever in his whole career ever gave a whole interview before just on the art and craft of songwriting, and obviously he knows a lot about it. But for this book, But I'm really happy you brought up Lieber and Stoller. They're so important, and a lot of people don't even know the name. But I got to say, it's my interview with James Taylor, I think, might be the most deep and one of the most intensive and dimensional interviews I've ever done. He was such a philosophical guy and so thoughtful. And though I was promised an hour, he let me stay the entire day at his home in Massachusetts. And we just got into levels of discussion that I didn't count on. And he's such a brilliant guy that I think that one really took it to a whole other place that I'm really proud of.
One of those aspects where you might be hopefully speaking shortly to Tessa Snott with respect to her dissertation, which focuses on media and various other aspects. But that's for another time, another day, really, which is all great stuff. Paul, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today? Has it been good for you, sir?
Absolutely. It's always a delight to talk to you, and I so appreciate this opportunity.
Well, thanks to R.W. Sanders. I noticed R.W. is getting a little bit concerned about the state of America these days. Don't worry, as long as Paul Zollo and company are there, it'll still be a good land. Not necessarily the land of the free, but the land of the Trumps. No, I didn't say that. It's different. So I take it then, Paul, you'd be able to join us again and come back in the not-too-distant future?
Anytime. I'm delighted to be with you anytime. It's a great joy for me.
Well, this is splendid, because in the wonderful words of Harry Chapin, he always likes to consider a song for himself. As you know, the one chap you didn't manage to interview in the whole thing, but still a great singer-songwriter and folk scenario, song for myself. By the way, Hannah, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
And Tessa, welcome to the programme.
Hello.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Good thing about it, you can listen to the past interview with Paul again on podcast, so it's all there. It'll all manifest in its own routine.
It's a song to myself. It's a song to myself. You don't have to listen, baby. It's just a song for myself. But since I fell in love with you, it brought some thoughts to mind. If we're gonna raise us a couple of kids, I got to worry about the future time. Do I believe that the answer is still blowing in the wind? Do I believe that there are good times rolling made just around the bend? Do I believe that with a little more love now, all our troubles end? Myself. Be a little good, be a little good, be a little good to my friends. It's just a thought that was in my mind. It's just a thought that's in my mind. You don't have to think it, babe. It's just a thought that was in my mind. But no one wrote a protest song since 1963. Are we all gonna listen to the moldy gold and say, just let it be? Do I believe that the answer is still? Should have something more to say.
never stoned out, smiling simply. Watch the world go away. Do I believe that the answer is still blowing in the wind? Do I believe that with a little more love now, all our troubles here? Do I believe that there are good times rolling, babe, just around the bend?
We all need one, a song for ourselves, even when you're having challenging times. We'll hear about Hannah's challenging time before the end of the programme. I think we're going to be keeping the psychotherapist in business, is all I can say, Hannah, but never mind, it's all right. Just breathe, breathe, that's the important thing. You're back with us, bottom midweek drive, all will work splendidly. Larry Nemechek isn't, so it's his loss. But Katie Grimerson, back in Birmingham, did put in a special request for the next little tune that's lined up to probably take us around either to Larry, actually more likely Phil Leonis. And Tessa is going to actually dedicate this to you, Katie Grimerson, as Tessa is, of course, the host of Sound and Country Vision. There we are. Would you like to actually introduce Katie's tune, please, Tessa Snart?
Yes. It's by Liam Gallagher.
He was an Oasis person.
He was. Well, what it's
sorry, worth. I cut across.
It's okay.
Let's start again. I'll shut okay. up. I'll even close my microphone down so you can do it from the top all over again.
Liam Gallagher, For What It's Worth.
Hey, this is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
And that means Larry is with us. Yay, Larry! Go, Larry! How are you, Larry?
I was glad I was able to beam in, Alex.
Marvellous. This is very critical. Of course, we're only a matter of hours away from Chris Dow's, the chap who actually has the column just before yours in Star Trek Monthly, joining us in the studio in his capacity as the columnist for Treknology in the Star Trek Monthly magazine, which obviously gets Fiona Williams saying, oh, great, more Star Trek. I know, it's ironic, but never mind. One of these days we'll keep chipping away there. Hannah Brown, of course, you've got a question that's been put in by an Australian, which I know you're keen to put to Larry, before indeed we even start talking about Star Trek Discovery. What is the question, please, Hannah?
Why did the Next Generation episode Conspiracy never get a follow-up?
There you are. Is he going to keep to the same answer he gave in Star Trek Monthly this time? I don't know.
I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah, exactly. Is Larry on the telephone the same as Larry in print?
Maybe they're two different people.
Maybe they are. No. It's because, well, two things. The ending scene that was so well done, where they blow up the motherhead alien's host body that looks like Commander Remick, they got a lot of criticism from people that it was too gory for TV in 1988.
Mm.
And even though the visual effects people had a lovely time putting it together and were trying to set the tone for the show, it was just the first season. And they were so burned by that they never went back to that plot point. Plus, at the time, the little alien parasite creatures, the little stop motion they had to use before CG, looked so cheesy that they didn't want to go back to them. So, I mean, even though years and years later, they could be revisited, but the original, the bad taste left in the mouth on two fronts. No one ever wanted to go back to that, which is a shame. It's crying for a sequel.
Yeah, these days, of course, 21st century, I never consider it to be a decent seminar unless one of the students has blown up their heads. But, yeah, that's fine by, as Tessa will attest to, you know.
Metaphorically, of course, Alex.
You must have had the easy class then, Hannah, obviously. We lose so many students from that point of view. Or maybe it's a public relations thing. Letha, character, of course, on Dagger of the Mind, based on the notion of the River of Forgetfulness in classical Greek. And that was the title of the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery. It seems as though it's winning more and more people over, Larry. It seems as though Star Trek Discovery is moving into becoming acceptable canon. And even our colleagues in Starburst magazine are giving it 3 and 4 thumbs up, even if they're dealing with opposable thumbs from 2 life forms.
I'm sorry, I'm just digesting all that out.
Yeah,
yes. In fact, I wondered if there's been the fan theory that Ash Tyler is actually Voak. That was Voak's punishment, his next giving everything up journey that we saw among the Klingons. That he's been made human, and he's a plant on Discovery, and that the whole juxtaposition of the character coming aboard and the timing, and that's a current fan theory about the actors and all these interesting conspiratorial tones. But the other wacky fan theory that's going around now is, when I saw Letha, I first thought I could hear James Gregory saying, "That's our Letha," from Catalyst 4, from Dagger of the Mind. Mm. And I thought, oh, of course you're not looking at that.
With a little confession, Larry, my favourite Star Trek guest actress in there, Marianne Williamson, as, of course, Lieutenant Helen Noel. She also went to star in Kung Fu with Kwai Chang Kane. Just thought I'd roll that out there. There we are.
Wow, I'd forgotten that. Mm-hmm. But we were laughing about that character, and then someone pointed out that the Admiral, who's now been taken, Admiral Cornwell, looks a lot like, physically, like that character would have 10 years later.
Indeed.
And so now they're thinking, there's a theory now that Cornwell is captured.
Is Letha.
She winds up, she's recaptured, but she's Letha. Yeah, she needs treatment, and Lorca just conveniently sends her off to a mental institution.
Yeah. Clearly the line, "I was another person." Is it relevant? I was another person then. You see, that's what you're missing out, Fiona, in terms of the whole Star Trek.
That would be a deep cut.
Yeah.
That's wild about having a streaming show, Star Trek, because people are thinking that way, where they never would have thought that as a standalone show, right? Yeah.
Much to recommend, according to Paul Mount in Starburst magazine, in Star Trek's return to the television screens, purists may find it hard to adjust to its super slick production values, its clear focus on one main character rather than presenting as a proper ensemble piece, and what appears to be a continuous developing story arc rather than individual 5-year mission adventure stories. What's most interesting about the series is that it looks as if it's genuinely found a way to reinvent the Trek wheel and make a 50-year-old franchise suddenly seem fresh and vital again. Yay, I say. Yay, a game.
Yay. But you know what? I reject that bit about it's just focused on one character, on Michael Burnham. Lorca is interesting. Saru is interesting. Tilly is interesting. Stamets is in. I mean, I think they're following several characters. I almost reject it. It's her story, but I think there's lots of characterizing.
I agree with you, Larry. In betwixt your own crises of losing phones and various other things, which we'll hear about with Phil Innes in a few moments, Hannah, have you decided to take that Netflix step into the unknown and actually start exploring Star Trek Discovery?
Once I've done my dissertation reading. But I will.
It would probably help you with your dissertation reading, of course.
Well, I was just admiring the magazine, actually.
It is a magazine to admire.
Yeah, it's beautiful design. Layout,
yeah.
And I feel in many ways as though Larry has paved the way for Chris Dowers to come tomorrow morning. He'll be in for the studio between 8 a.m. and 8:45. And indeed, we've already launched the concept of our next Telefantasy and Society event, which is set for 2019. Would you like to know what the theme is going to be, Larry?
Oh, I'm dying to hear.
60 years of the Twilight Zone. I know. It's there's a Trek connection there, but, you know, we're working through that whole process. But, you know, 60 years, 50 years, of course, since the Apollo moon landings. It's all time. Larry, it's been, again, slightly shorter than normal because we've got an answer phone to start off with, but we got you live in person, which is good from that perspective. So, Hannah, what's the next question we have to put to Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek?
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us this evening?
I always have, yes. Thank you so much for having me back.
And will you be joining us again soon?
As soon as you have me.
I think because of the series that is developing, we've got all these little plot points to work through. We've got a new edition of Star Trek, the magazine that's coming through. Larry, would you like Benny King's version or John Lennon's version of Stand By Me?
Oh, I've got to hear Benny King's.
That's good, because it was written by Lieber and Stoller, and that's who we've been celebrating today with, indeed, the fabulous Paul Zollo. It's been the fabulous Larry Nemechek. Round of applause for Larry Nemechek, please. And Q Lieber, Q Stoller, Q Benny King.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So dark, tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble to the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me, and all.
And of course, being a good, faithful Midweek Drivette, Tessa Snart did stand by Hannah Brown.
She did. She was a very good friend.
Phil Innes, you would stand by us, wouldn't you?
In my own way, yes. I would stand far away and yet in spirit be by you.
Nice. You know, Fiona Williams is back with us.
Yay!
And she's managed to get 1 hour and 40 minutes of her return to the Midweek Drive after all of last year was spent horse riding. Well, not all the year, obviously. It was just one of those things. Proving that, you know, Midweek Drives for life, not just for Christmas. Let's move on. Hannah, I know that Phil is always looking for story ideas. Would you like to actually share with Phil and the assembled listeners exactly why you were 1 hour, 20 minutes slightly tardy to the Midweek Drive today? What tragedies and what challenges were you going through?
Well, okay.
I'll give you a music theme if you want, basically.
Well, me and Tess were filming.
Please, Tessa and I. Let's get it grammatically correct.
I've had a hard evening, Alex. You know, give me the grammar. Okay, so me and Tess and I were filming, and we had the cameras, went to the newsrooms, and we're doing it. And then we were taking the camera to then come down to Siren when I realised that this was not our camera. So you see, all the journalism cameras come in the same case. And two lads on our course had the same camera. And I realised they must have returned our camera while we had theirs. See, this would be fine, except my phone was in the case with the camera. So we went down to Media Loans to ask if we could switch the cameras over, because we needed the other camera for an interview we're doing tomorrow morning. And she passed us the only other camera she had there, but it didn't have my phone in it. She then said she had just lent out a camera, which was the one with my phone in. So then we were... That was good timing on that sound effect. So then we had to work out who had the camera. So we're asking her for descriptions, and then she remembered the name of the person who did it, and we knew that person. So then we were frantically on Tess's phone trying to get in contact with him. He wasn't picking up. So we were then on the description of the person who was with him, trying to work out who that was, messaged another guy on our course. It wasn't him, but he knew that Connor, who was the one who had the case, was somewhere around campus filming for RTV tomorrow. Now, we knew what story he was covering, so worked out whereabouts he would be, went there, went in, and he was like, "I have your phone." He was like, "We know. Why didn't you pick up yours?" So I got my phone back, opened up my phone case, my student card's missing. So the plus side is, I now have my phone, I am at Siren, but I don't have my student card. But
which lets you into all the
which lets me into the building and all the newsrooms. But Tess is a good friend, so I'll just follow her.
Yeah, we'll just go together. And she nearly lost a glove, but it's okay.
I got my glove back. Yeah. It's all good. So yeah,
it always happens in threes.
The expression on Holly McGrattan's face is actually joy to behold as she's looking at it. Saying, what? Phil. Oh. I mean, I appreciate we're biting into your time here as cultural correspondent from Los Angeles, and we've already spoken to Andre Paulzolo, Larry Nemechek, and so on. But Phil, is that a movie waiting to be made, or is that a movie waiting to be made?
Well, first of all, I'm much more cultural correspondent of the Pacific Northwest,
nice.
Portland and Seattle this week. But yes, because what she didn't reveal was that the person whose camera it was has already been killed, and that the footage on that camera of a political assassination that was never supposed to be filmed is about to get you into real hot water.
This is obviously all true.
That's just some of the joys of being an adventurous Midweek Drivette. Good. Right. A reminder, of course, that I was going to say Past Prologue. That's another show entirely from another season, another routine. That occurs in November when we're actually doing the Past Prologue routine. No, indeed, it's Word Perfect that comes around just after 7 o'clock. Okay, Holly, any questions you want to put to Phil about life, the universe? Has he heard any of the programme? Is he aware of Libra and Stoller? Any of those kind of things will work. Over to you, Holly.
I'm going to ask the same question as I did to William Coles. Mm-hmm. How is Halloween over there? Mm-hmm.
Oh, Halloween's going to be so much fun, and I just learned a spectacular true murder story in Los Angeles that took place on Halloween one year, where a man in a suit, not in a costume, just wearing a suit, shows up to a Halloween costume and murdered somebody, and it took 2 years for the police to solve it because everyone at the party thought it was a fake. It wasn't until the next day that they realized that the person had actually killed someone. They thought it was all just a stunt for the Halloween party. So it's a big deal here in Los Angeles. It's a big ghosts and ghost stories are an important part of Hollywood lore and of the history. In terms of Lieber and Stoller, indeed, of course, the greatest, most prolific pop songwriters, but also, unless I'm mistaken, Lieberstuhl is also a wonderful Bavarian dessert, isn't it? I love to get a nice slice of Lieberstuhler.
See what you did there? Very good. Your cross-cultural correspondent carries on regardless.
I woke up, Alex, on Monday morning in a Bavarian alpine village in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State with snow on the ground. Got on a plane that night to Burbank, California, where it was 104 degrees. That's one day. That's the same coast. How is that possible?
Because you have Donald Trump as president. That's how it's possible, my son.
You promised you wouldn't remind me. I mean, I go on these road trips, and that's the beauty of it. You go to Monument Valley, where The Searchers was filmed, as I did at the beginning of this month. You go to the Cascade Mountains, from where my people come, and you're surrounded where Twin Peaks was filmed. And you and you're surrounded by this incredible natural splendor. And for moments at a time, Donald Trump doesn't seem that significant.
That's because it's all down to perception. Fiona, you haven't been on the Midweek Drive since, of course, there was a change in presidential White House occupancy. So, you know, yes. Did you celebrate in Edinburgh?
Celebrate?
The fact that you're in Edinburgh, obviously.
No. I was... back at uni at that point.
Right.
And stayed up late at my friend's apartment and watched the elections unfold, and that was a very interesting night, to say the least.
Anyway, so it goes. Hannah, any thoughts that you'd like to share with Phil, allowing for the fact that the latest edition of Chilpack Hollywood just goes on and on with respect to Chilpack Hollywood Hour, with Dean Hagland, of course, and Phil Linus, your friends in podcasting.
Was that even a question?
No, it was just a statement, actually, Phil.
I got lost halfway.
You just said that the Chilpack Hollywood Hour goes on and on with the Chilpack Hollywood Hour. That's
yes.
Literally what you just said.
Exactly.
I don't understand. You know, there's a rumor. There's a rumor, and the rumors are always true in show business. You know that. That Dean Haglund's moving back from Sydney, Australia in June of next year. Moving back to Los Angeles.
So that's a few months after you might be back in the British Isles then, Phil.
Absolutely.
We could take him on the ghost walks here.
You know. Phil, would you like to be escorted by Tessa Snart and Hannah on the ghost walks?
I've done the ghost walks. Yeah. I think
I've done
is,
it twice.
Oh, Hannah has. She's expert.
Absolutely. I have a camera and I need to film it. So absolutely, they can be on-camera guides.
As William Coles actually said earlier today, he wants his jingle ready for next week, so I'm going to have to get the stuff to Phil. He's going to have to sort it through. It's going to be a very challenging time. Anyway, Hannah, it still falls to your good self to throw in a few questions to Phil, if you wish.
Well, my head's all over.
It is. Yeah,
exactly. From phone to trying to work out the questions.
Yeah.
Some people think my head's still on the phone. In the future, what's your advice on, you know, not losing phones in places?
good question. One. Very good question.
In the future, it's going to be implanted into your brain anyway, so you're not going to, you know, there's no going to be any way to lose it or misplace it. So yeah. I think that it will just sort itself out.
Well, when I get stressed, I leave phones or my stuff all over the place. It happened second year college. I left my purse somewhere. I left my phone somewhere. So.
Is that not just a case of marking your territory? Effectively, right. You sort of say, I'll leave this here because I shall return and claim it. This is a bit of the land that is mine.
I think it's...
Yeah, but if it were a dream, that would not be the interpretation, because our phone is so much our mode of communication. That's what it is. And so the question would be, how are you letting yourself, your stress, distractions, keep you out of the here and now and out of communicating with your own authentic voice? That's what the Mike Dooley-esque interpretation of it would be. So it is important. It is important to always stay centered and focused where you are and let your phone be a reminder that maybe there are ways in which you're not using your authentic voice in the here and now.
And indeed, Playing the Matrix is going to be released in a matter of days from now, October 31st. Which reminds me, Phil, we haven't actually given Hannah the chance of actually making that selection of a universal thought to help her through this particular challenging moment. So I was originally going to offer this to Fiona, but I'm sure Fiona will be gracious enough to actually say, now, Hannah, you can have the choice of going between 2 and 26 and actually coming up with a suitable number in which the universe will, through the medium of Mike Dooley, come up with a suitable thought for yourself. So, Hannah.
It's a trap. Don't do it. It's a trap.
15. 36 seconds of non-trapful stuff.
There are no accidents. If it's appeared on your radar, this is why. To teach you that dreams come true. To reveal that you have the power to fix what's broken and heal what hurts. To catapult you beyond seeing with just your physical senses. And to lift the veils that have kept you from seeing that you're already the person you dreamed you'd one day become. And believe me, it was one heck of a dream. Tally-ho, the universe.
You see? I mean, was that coincidence or was it simply, Kate, there are no accidents? You see, even Phil Linus has actually gone quiet with respect to that one.
He's gone blank.
I was wondering if Fuzz Aldrin had some comment because she's been sniffing the phone. So, yes, Mike Dooley and I, we're two sides of the same coin or two, I don't know, the same side of two different coins. We're something.
I haven't had a chance to actually check out Chilpack Hollywood recently, but has Dean Hagland been doing his duty and actually giving you reviews of Star Trek Discovery? Or is it because I realise that Phil's taken this political action of effectively refusing to actually watch the series? I think he's his loss.
I'm glad you brought this up for two, both so I can plug the show. No, clearly you have not been listening. That was an assignment for when we reconvened in November, because he's been spending the month in Cambodia painting while I've been on the road showing The Lady Killers. So he has not had the chance. We've not had anything other than pre-recorded episodes. But I'm glad you brought it up, because I was thinking this morning about the fact that since the premiere, or the day after the premiere, I've heard no one mention Star Trek Discovery. Like, literally no one is talking about it. I didn't even know it was still a thing until you just brought it up, and it made me wonder, like, is it playing well overseas, because there's no mentions of it. You can't even read about it here.
Yes, you can, Phil, in Starburst magazine, and indeed tomorrow morning, if you're able to join us via Skype. He hasn't done that for such a long time. We don't know what the weather's like from Los Angeles and Lincoln. But he could actually speak to one of these Star Trek contributors, and indeed mutual editors for Star Trek magazine. That's Chris Dowes, who's in the studio with us, because he's now one of our collegiate staff. And as I said earlier, when we revealed to Larry Nemechek, the theme of Telefantasy Society 3 will be the 60th anniversary of The Twilight Zone.
I was at a science fiction event this weekend, and no one knew what I was talking about when I mentioned Discovery.
Well, so, clearly you were amongst people who might have been masquerading.
And this was all Star Trek. I mean, this was Star Trek people. Like, Tim Russ was there. And, I mean, it was so, yeah, that's good. That's good. That's because I told you when this first came on and you heard the Chilpack thing that it's going to be up to other countries to keep the brand alive because they're literally not letting Americans see the show.
Well, there must be a reason for that, is all I can say. And sometimes, you know, profit's not accepted in their own countries. I'm looking at the time and I'm seeing that it's already approaching 6 minutes to 7 o'clock, and we've got poets who want to dive into the studio and do their word perfect stuff. And we have to say thank you to Jenny Finch, to William Coles, Annette Andre. Wonderful reflections on the Portmorean experience of the prisoner events that took place, as opposed to the Seattle one, which tragically didn't. Paul Zollo, songwriters on songwriting, Larry Nemechek, and of course Phil Dearness. Fiona, go for it. The last two questions, please, for Phil Dearness. I know you've been waiting for this. Holly's done a fine job so far, but please take it with zest and gusto.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us tonight?
Yes, I mean, he just hit us with so much info that I want to follow up on. But yes, it was interesting. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And can we expect to hear from you again sometime soon?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be staying on the line following up with questions after the show is over.
Okay. Well, that's what we like. You know, it's like the added bonus scenario. It's like Matt Mira and After Trek.
Overtime.
Exactly.
It's overtime. People can join us on YouTube to hear the rest of it.
Exactly. It's an added bonus, just like indeed Sound and Country Vision had an added extra 10-minute bonus in the latest episode. Tess, are you back with us next week, or are you BBC Radio 2-ing?
I'm not. That's the following week. I'm not sure whether I'll be here yet.
Might be here, might be there, might be looking after mobile phones, etc.
Anna,
who knows?
I won't be here next week.
There we are.
I have work experience for the next 2 weeks.
Well, there we have it. You know, it's all done and dusted. But good news is we will be continuing, because Holly, will you be with us?
I'll be here.
Yep. And we're transferring Lauren Brown from the morning slot to the afternoon slot. She's probably doing both, yes. So Lauren Brand, is that Fiona? Will you be returning?
Possibly.
She doesn't know. It's all wondrous stuff. That's it. Thanks to Hannah Brown, Tessa Snart, Fiona Williams, Sam Biggs, and, of course, Holly McGrattan for being with us today. The aforementioned telephonic contactees we've already mentioned. That's it. We're out of here. Can we all say hailing frequencies close, please? A 1, 2, 3. Hailing frequencies close.
Please.